Who are you?
Okay. So who am I professionally? I'll tell you both. Yeah. So I'll start professionally. So professionally, what I think I do is I am the person who really sets culture for the company. I think culture and vision, and I help to recruit really good people to do really good work. I empower them to have a lot of autonomy, and then to build things that maybe wouldn't have gotten built had they not been here. So I'm not somebody who directs people. I'm somebody that empowers people and lets them go, and then my team brings really good ideas back, and we build consensus around those ideas, and we really build things together. So I think I'm a little bit of Ted Lasso, a little bit of Jerry Maguire at the office. Not much. I don't know a whole lot about what's going on in the field. Like Ted Lasso doesn't know about the soccer game. There's a lot of things that are happening in this company at this point that are way beyond me. But what I can do is get people excited about doing their position and lean on people that really know things and empower them to go make really, really great things happen. So at the company, I think that's probably how I would describe what I'm doing. At home, I'm a father of, four kids that are all married. My youngest son just got married last week, actually.
Oh, wow. And, congrats.
Yeah, thank you. And seven grandkids. So got a full plate.
Awesome.
And, my wife and I really are excited about building a family that's successful and productive, that also fosters an entrepreneurial thinking in their mindsets. Whether or not they're actually entrepreneurs, most of them are. One of them works for us, and she's more of an entrepreneur. She works for the company,
okay,
Holganics, and she's really like our chief of staff, chief of all strategic, pulling all the strategic initiatives together. She's kind of the hub of the company. The rest of my kids are all self-employed, and so we try to really champion the entrepreneurial thinking within the family. We have core values as a family. Our little chat that we have, when all the kids want to, send something to everybody, it's GFACE, GFACE is all the first letters of all of our core values as a family. So as a family, okay, we talk about core values and we operate from a sense of core values. And it's been really cool to see how the family's grown now where everybody's married. We've got all these independent families. We still all get together and love to be with each other. And to me is
that
success.
Says a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Where did that all come in for you? Like, did you grow up like that? Is that something you've picked up even instilling these core values? I mean, of course, I know, you've been an entrepreneur since what, like 17 or something when you started in the lawn business? Like it's been your whole life. So that I can see that path, but at home, like where did all that start?
Yeah, well, I think, so 17, I had my first company. 3 weeks into college, my high school sweetheart finds out that my oldest daughter is going to join us.
Okay.
And we should get married. My oldest daughter wanted us to get married, and she was just 3 months inside of my wife. And so we decided to do that at 18.
Yeah.
And so here we are, just a couple of kids, starting a family. The only thing we could do is double down on entrepreneurship, because how are you going to get a job at 18 and support a family in any kind of manner? So I just got really focused on entrepreneurship and business, and it really empowered our family to really beat the odds of, we've been married now 35 years.
Yeah.
And, to have that, entrepreneur opportunity, but also lack of other opportunities that made entrepreneurship the thing to do, it really freed us up as a couple. And I think it empowered us to be the parents we needed to be, even though we were young and wouldn't have had a normal path.
But like, look at you now though, right? Like seven grandchildren. Like I was actually shocked to hear that, because I mean, you're pretty young for seven grandchildren, but I guess that's the other flip side of that, starting the family young like that.
Oh, it's wonderful. I mean, today it's wonderful. I mean, I missed all the party years of college and all, which,
sure,
at the end of the day, that maybe would have been fun, but it probably wouldn't have been very productive. Instead, I got really productive really early. And so now we have great, great family, and I'm 54, my wife's 53. So we're still really young and have great kids. And in fact, as a couple, our compelling vision off into the horizon that we work towards, the way we kind of envision it is our 80th wedding anniversary. And who's going to be at the 80th wedding anniversary? How many kids and grandkids and great grandkids are going to be there? And, you know, my wife's got her dress picked out and what the song is going to look like. And, you know, we can think about our 80th wedding anniversary. We're only going to be 98, 99. I mean, that's kind of reasonable these days.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of fun to sit there and think about that and what we will have created in our life. And we're just, you know, we're just getting started, really.
Yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah.
How are you? I have so many questions. I want to stick with the family of right now, because it's a great thread. So outside of the kind of the family core values and so forth, like how have you, it sounds like your wife and you chat quite a bit, like, you know, with the 80th wedding anniversary and so forth. Like, do you have dedicated times, or have you incorporated this into certain family events to like check in as a collective, as a group to get clear on these things?
Yeah, for sure. So one of the things that that we've done to inspire this entrepreneurial thinking in our family, but also in the families of other entrepreneurs that I end up hanging out with, is every year we do an entrepreneurial family retreat down in the Keys in Florida. And we take 4 days. Every year is a different theme. And we have, you know, entrepreneurial, you know, mom and dad, mom or dad, could be one of them, could be both of them, and their kids. And it could be, the kids could be two, or the kids could be 22. It doesn't make a difference. And we all get together. We have a theme every year, and we try to work on, you know, is spreading entrepreneurial thinking and financial intelligence and, you know, core values and things like that into the families. And so the kids, the vision there is the kids is at 10 and up can really start thinking about owning a business, starting a business, and that becomes like a normal conversation. So we've been doing that every year now for like 14 years. So that's a really cool reset as a family, and my entire family, you know, comes to that. And for sure, my kids have more successful businesses today because of that family retreat than they would have.
Yeah.
Had we not had that, because they learn a lot more from their fun uncles and their fun aunts than they might from me. Like, they've heard my shtick.
Yeah. Yeah.
They hear just a slightly different version from their fun uncle. All of a sudden it's gospel, but you know, whatever I said, it kind of rolls right off of them. So, you know, surrounding them with a bunch of, you know, fun uncles and fun aunts that have entrepreneurial, you know, kind of mindset really helps to do that. But we also work on these ideas like core values as an example. We did that at a family retreat. Then we make up, each family had to come up with a family theme song that incorporated the core values, and then perform that family theme song. So, you know, really funny things happen from that. We also follow I don't know if you've seen Jim and Jamie Shields. They have something called the family board meeting. And 18 Summers. They wrote a book called 18 Summers, and they have a podcast as well. And they're a couple that come to our family retreat every year, and they've been, you know, great friends and in some cases mentors. They have a concept where they, you know, you're to meet your kids quarterly in a board meeting and to actually go through their goals, go through, you know, what they mean to you, what you mean to them, how you can be a better parent, how they can be a better kid, and to actually give each other feedback and to spend half a day once a quarter with your kids. Is a way to kind of continue, you know, kind of building that relationship and helping them to grow too. So that gives us time to reset as well.
Yeah. I love that, because if I reflect on a lot of the work that I do within teams and organizations, a lot of it starts with helping people figure out the best times to check in with themselves to get some data, like where am I at? What's going on? What's off and so forth. But if you're starting that in that setting, like the kids are just naturally getting the tools, like that check-in tool, which is life. I mean, it's invaluable. And because I see it, right? Like, we've talked when we were together. I mean, a lot of people are struggling out there, a lot of people. And I think a lot of that is around people are just on autopilot and they're not asking these questions. They're not checking in. They've kind of lost the North Star because there's so much noise. There's so much going on, right? So powerful.
And I'll tell you, just as an example, just 2 days ago, my son calls me. He just got married last week. He says, "Hey, Dad, I just got back from the honeymoon. You know, I'm starting the next chapter of my life. I want to talk to you about my goals and how I'm thinking about things."
And that's amazing.
We set up a meeting. We haven't actually had that meeting yet. But we'll have that meeting here in the next couple of days. But like, that occurred to him to call me to rehash his goals now that his life's changed.
That's got to land right in the heart, right? As a dad.
It's absolutely beautiful, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm really grateful that it's worked out that way. And my wife's been really supportive in doing this. And frankly, Mark, part of the motivation is, it's inspiration and a little bit of fear. You know, when you get married at 18 and everybody tells you that you're making the wrong decision and there's no way you're going to be able to create a family and be successful, you know, my wife and I got really focused on there's no way we're not going to pull this off. And so we probably overdid it in focusing and making sure that we're not going to mess this up, that we got really intentional with a lot of things that maybe other families don't think about.
Sure, sure. Why don't you just give us a bit of a description of what it is that you do day in and day out and the work that you're putting out into this world? Because I have a lot of questions, of course, and I'd love for you to share some stories. But it's really, when I heard you speak at the event we were at together, it's just really inspiring, you know? And I feel like there's, especially in today's world right now, I think we need more of like that bigger thinking, that, you know, the impact of the work that we're doing and the reach and what's possible, like in the millions and billions. Like, we need more of that, right? 'Cause there's so much uncertainty and fear in the market in general. And I just left, like, there were many times that kind of full body chills when you're sharing, you know, the journey and what you're working on. So can you just give us a little bit of flavor of what's going on in your world?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so from a company perspective, the company's called Holganics. The word Holganics is, you know, it's a holistic organic approach to healthy soil and healthy plants. That's where the word came from. Holganics.com is, you know, the website. So we put an X at the end so we could kind of own the word. But what we fundamentally do is we're a company that helps partner with farmers to drive soil health. And we fundamentally believe that if we can help farmers drive soil health, at the end of the day, they can reduce fertilizer, they can reduce pesticides, they can increase yield, they can improve their P&L, which right now a farmer's P&L is really tough to be successful farmer. Everything's working against them right now, commodity prices and everything else. And so if we can get in there and help the farmer, you know, make more money per acre by reducing their inputs, improving their yield, and then ultimately their asset is their farm and how productive it is. So if we improve soil health, you improve the asset value of that farm. So really, a really inspiring thing to be able to go there and help the American farmer produce more while using less. But even more exciting than that, or as exciting as that, is we're helping them to sequester a significant amount of carbon. As we build healthy soil, we build a deep fungal networks that weren't there before. And as we build those fungal networks, we can actually take CO2 out of the atmosphere. The plant naturally converts that into oxygen and carbon. Oxygen goes up, carbon goes down. That happens every day in photosynthesis. But usually that carbon stays in the first 4 or 5 inches and it respires and goes back up in the air. So it doesn't actually stay there. But we're able to build these fungal networks that pull the carbon down deep into the soil. We can then measure that and prove it's there. Once we do that, we can actually mint carbon credits and help the farmer have a whole nother crop. We're doing right now, you know, building soil health, improving the P&L on the farm, and sequestering a significant amount of carbon, you know, we're helping the American farmer feed the planet and clean the planet at the same time. And really, they're the hero.
Well, and us as consumers, now we're also, you know, consuming food that ideally is not going to make us sick and kill us eventually with a bunch of chemicals and all of that, right?
That's right.
There's that element too.
Yeah. I mean, healthy people come from healthy food. Healthy food comes from healthy soil.
Yeah.
And so it's absolutely is where everything starts. And so we're at the very forefront of that entire movement. And, you know, we're a rapidly growing company. And it's really cool to see the bigger we get as a company, the more good we're able to do for the rural communities and for the planet.
Yeah.
So it's just such a rewarding thing to do. Money's not the motivation for this job. I mean, it's a byproduct because we're doing good work and the money flows, but the motivation is really the mission and to help fix topsoil first in the United States and Canada, but ultimately we think we can do it around the world. And, and we can really start to create a healthy flywheel of healthy soil that's healthy food and healthy people and revive rural communities. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for us to get to be a piece of that puzzle.
Yeah, it's really inspiring and very, very exciting. And, but I do have to ask you, I mean, like help paint the picture of what's in my mind is I have a visual of you standing in front of literally a burnt down business to getting to the point, I might have some of these details wrong, but what I have in my mind is you've got Richard Branson coming in with a parachute of some sort, a giant, one of his giant boats coming by, you know, honking the horn. And was your logo on the side of the ship or something too? Or
yeah.
So how do we go from those two scenarios?
So first of all, how do we get into this you know, idea of you know, healthy soil and farmers? Starts off with my first business in 17 was a lawn care company. We sprayed lawns and killed weeds. We didn't cut grass or plant trees. All we did was put down fertilizer and kill weeds. I built that up to a fairly successful company in my 20s and sold it to Scotts, the fertilizer people. And then I started another lawn care company because that's really all I knew how to do. I just had to start another market because I had a non-compete in Philly. So I went to Baltimore and started one. That one we built significant. That one we had over 200 trucks out spraying lawns every day. And it was one of the biggest lawn care companies in the Mid-Atlantic region. And again, chemical fertilizers and pesticides, nothing like what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
Organics. And, you know, we're the largest lawn care company around the Chesapeake Bay watershed. And fertilizer doesn't stay where you put it all the time. Some of it runs off and it runs off into our water. And when it runs off in the bay, it makes everything in the bay that's green grow like crazy. So phytoplankton, algae blooms start to go crazy. When that happens, you get something called hypoxia, which is the algae actually starves the water of oxygen and actually creates fish kill. And they call them dead zones. And so, you know, my wife and I were passionate about being on the water. Both of my sons today are professional fishermen. That's what they do for a living. They have charter boat businesses. Wow. And so we fished all the time as a young family. And I'm looking at my wife and we're looking at where the dead zones are. So we know where to fish because you want to stay away from the dead zones. And I said to my wife, what's more important, the quality of our lawns or the quality of our water? And I said, it's a silly question with an obvious answer, but our lawn care industry was not operating as though the quality of our lawns were more important than the quality of our waters, how they were operating. Sure. And I thought, you know, this is just dumb. I said, we either have to fix this or we have to get into another industry. And so that just that one idea led us on to lots of experimentation. It ultimately led me down this rabbit hole of soil microbes and what microbes are really powerful in driving, you know, healthier soil and reducing fertilizer and that type of thing. I hook up with a microbiologist. I didn't have the background. I just knew the question. And then I went to go look for people who had the background to help solve the question. And so we started to experiment with different kinds of microbial technologies. I'm not sure we were ready to do it prime time. In fact, I'm sure we weren't ready to do it prime time. We had 3 trucks out of 200 that were our experimental trucks. The customer didn't know they were getting experimented on, but we were trying different technologies to see if we could reduce fertilizer and perfect this thing. But it was a long way away from being ideal. In the meantime, all of our chemical fertilizer goes up and down like oil. And so when fertilizer is getting ready to go up, you could buy all the fertilizer you can at low prices. That's kind of like hedging your price. Mm. And so we typically would have, you know, 5-6 days worth of fertilizer on hand. But because we saw this price spike coming, we'd actually bought all the fertilizer we could possibly store in our warehouse. And we had about 3.5 months worth of fertilizer on hand. And of course, you know, we had a contractor that was finishing some work up and he ended up setting a fire in the warehouse. And when you see, you know, we're talking $700,000 worth of fertilizer. When you see $700,000 worth of fertilizer catch on fire, it's spectacular. Spectacularly bad, but spectacular. I mean, it looks like a nuclear bomb went off. Just picture this big black plume of smoke goes up and a mushroom cloud almost. We have all the news helicopters, the local news are going around in circles around our building because we're this local environmental disaster. All my trucks are lined up, all logoed up. So we were on the news that day. And my dad saw it and he came down and he lived nearby and he saw it on the news. And I can remember, and there's a picture of this. My dad puts his arm around me and the building's kind of smoldering. The fire department had put the fire out at this point for the most part. But there's still smoke coming off. My dad puts his arm around me and he said, I'm so sorry this had to happen today, son. And by the way, we did not have content insurance. So it was a $700,000 loss. We had a reasonably big business at the time, but $700,000 unexpected loss was maybe going to put us out of business. And so he literally has a tear in his eye because he could see this is going to be a challenge for the company and for me. And I said, Dad, it's okay. Today's a good day. And he goes, today's a good day? How is today a good day? I said, I don't know. I don't know how and I don't know why, but I choose to believe that today is a good day. I believe that for some reason there's a gift on the other side of this, and I don't know what it is. And my dad, literally, he says, stand right here. I'm going to take a picture of you with this smoldering thing. And I still have this picture. And he says, when you find out what the gift is, we're going to come back to this picture because that's a very unique response.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. So you know, I'd had that response because of a, believe it or not, 2 months before that, I was at a business event and we had a Catholic Benedictine monk named Brother David Steindl-Rast come out and talk to us. And Brother David today is 99 years old, and he's the father of the gratitude movement within the Catholic faith. And he has a website called gratefulness.org still today that sends out messages. And so Brother David came to talk to us as business leaders. And he said, listen, businesses can be change agents for good. One of the greatest change agents for good in the world if they operate from the right set of core values. And he wanted to talk to us about values and specifically the value of gratitude and how gratitude can help. If we could have this idea of gratitude inside the companies as core values and we operated from that as leaders, we could help inspire a positive ripple of gratitude throughout our employees, throughout our customers, and ultimately throughout the world. That was his vision. And he also said this idea of gratitude is a great opportunity for you to build resiliency, because it's not about being grateful for the good things, although that's an important part of gratitude, but it's about being grateful for even the dark days and the challenging times. He goes on to tell me, he says, if you can trust that everything in life is a gift, even days that appear to be full of darkness and despair, if you can trust that those days are gifts, then you remove stress, conflict, and anxiety from your heart and you replace it with peace, creativity, and opportunity. And he goes on to say, if you can trust that everything life brings you is a gift, even when it seems like it's a pile of shit, then you can have peace, creativity, and opportunity. He says, that's like heaven on earth. Because what is heaven if not peace, creativity, and opportunity in your heart? He goes on to say, you know, we can't control what happens to us. We can only control how we respond to what happens to us. But if we can respond in the moment, especially in adversity, with gratitude and trust and faith, faith in life, faith in God, however you want to say it, then that gives you all the power you need to find the opportunity and creativity on the other side. So I had seen Brother David 2 months before this. And so I thought, well, if there's ever a time to test Brother David's theory, this is it.
That's why
I looked at my dad and I said, what else can I do?
Yeah.
I'm grateful. And here's the cool thing. The next day, we got our team into a room and I said, listen, we've got to go out and hang paper. That's what we call them when we generate invoices and put them on people's front doors.
Oh, okay.
And we didn't have any fertilizer. And the supply house, some of that fertilizer was on credit, and the supply house wouldn't sell us any more fertilizer because they were afraid we were going to go out of business. And we did have this goofy microbial stuff, though, that we hadn't really proved out, and we weren't even sure it worked. And I said, look, we can either spray water on everybody's lawns, because lawns need water, and just get some invoices going until we can buy some more fertilizer, or we can put this goofy microbial stuff down, and you know, I don't know if it works or not, and like it's had a whole bunch of challenges in how to use it and changing our sprayers around, and it wasn't easy. But, you know, at least we can look our people in the eye and tell them we're doing something.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work, we'll get back to the chemical stuff, you know, pretty quick. So we decided that day to become the goofy microbial, you know, lawn care company, even though the stuff was not ready for prime time. It was super beta and it needed a lot of troubleshooting to make it work effectively. But we went all in because we didn't have a choice. And that was the gift, is it actually forced us to get really serious about not just an idea we could reduce fertilizer, but we had no fertilizer, so we had to reduce fertilizer.
Yeah.
And how could we still create green weed free? And we got really creative, and we started to really learn that this could work. And there were some things that needed to be solved. It wasn't ready for prime time, really, but we were getting there, and we were getting there way faster than we would have had we not had the crisis. You know, it reminds me of COVID, and you know, and you remember in COVID, like how are we all going to operate? We can't do Zoom meetings. We can't run our businesses remotely, and yet, you know, the whole world changed afterwards because we all had to find different ways to run our businesses. And I had to find a different way to run my business. And I looked for creativity and opportunity instead of looking for problems and anxiety and challenges. I mean, we could have gone bankrupt. Nobody would have blamed me. I could have said, woe is me. Nope. Everybody would have. Hey, of course, you have every right to say, woe is me. I could have went and punched that contractor in the head. And you know, guys, my friend still to this day, I didn't do that. But, you know, I didn't do any of that. I just said, hey, it's a gift. And guess what I found? I found a gift. And that gift has turned into what started off to be the Bay Safe Lawn Care Company around Baltimore, which is what we were on in the initial mission. That's what we decided we were going to be. And then I thought, hey, maybe we could revolutionize the lawn care industry across the country and actually change this industry. So I started to think about building a national lawn care company that went across the country. And I had a mentor of mine, and I told him my plan. And he says, listen, this microbial stuff you're telling me still needs development. To go build 400, 500 trucks across the country, you're gonna go out of your mind managing all these people and trying to build this product. Sell your company, go all in on the microbial stuff if that's what you think can change the planet. Find other people to put it down and partner with them. And so that's what we did. We actually sold that lawn spray operation, kept the microbial technology, partnered with that microbiologist, bought the IP from him, brought him in as an R&D guy, and then started to experiment with, you know, creating the perfect consortium of microbes that could drive soil health using microbes and reduce fertilizer dramatically. And we went out and partnered with a bunch of lawn care companies, 700 golf courses, a bunch of ball fields you see on TV, you know, baseball, NFL, that kind of thing. And we did actually have an impact on how people, you know, create green weed-free lawns. It wasn't ultimately the market that was going to scale the business. It was the place I knew how to start.
Yeah.
But that led us into agriculture.
How long did that take, Barrett, that initial, like, from selling the lawn care company to, you know, the ball fields and like kind of continuing what you knew and then getting to the where I think you're heading now of like, okay, yeah, this was the next phase.
Good question. So we sold the company, you know, late in 2009, 2010, we start Holganics. So we started in 2010 Holganics with no revenue, a beta product that was not ready for prime time. I had a pile of money from selling the company, but you know, I'm putting it all back in this thing.
Yeah.
So it took us 2 years just to get formulations worked out and to get some trials done and to like actually have a product that we could be consistent with. So that was 2 years of just formulation and no revenue or very little revenue. And then we started to, so from 2012 to 2015, we started building out, you know, distribution and lawn care and golf courses and that type of thing. So we started generating revenue, but you know, when I say revenue, like, you know, $5 million in revenue over those 3 years annually. Not a big company and not paying the bills. Like we're spending more than $5 million and, you know, losing $1 million or so a year and I'm financing that myself. And my wife and I at this point have put everything back in. You know, we're starting to now, you know, the house we just paid off has now got a mortgage on it. You know, entrepreneurs do.
You're back right in it.
That's right. And so, you know, I would have told you when I started that company, by the way, I would have told you within 5 years, this is going to be a, you know, $100 million business and we're going to sell it for a whole bunch of money. And yeah, within 5 years, we were losing $1 million a year and, you know, doing $5 million in revenue. But, you know, yeah, it was getting there. And so 2015, we had one of our customers, a landscape customer who also had a farm, just started putting it down on his farm. And in fact, he won a watermelon competition. He was an Amish guy in Lancaster.
Okay.
And they had a local watermelon competition that his uncle had won 11 years in a row. And he beat the uncle and he said our stuff was his secret sauce. And so I didn't even thought about it, you know, agriculture at all. And then that light bulb went off. Wow, this could not just revolutionize lawn care industry. We could revolutionize the way the world grows anything. And if we could really have an impact in how people eat and feed the planet, like this would be bigger than lawn care. Lawn care could be a nice crop, but boy, if we get the corn, soy, cotton, wheat, you know, produce, like we could really have impact. So that was 2015 when that light bulb went off. And literally I had my first farmer meeting was a bunch of Amish farmers in a barn. I drove up to this meeting and there's a bunch of horses and buggies outside and gas lights in the barn. And I'm literally on a soapbox talking to these farmers about how to use this stuff. And I didn't even really understand exactly how we're going to do it. And I told them that. I said, if you experiment with me, I'll experiment with you and we'll learn together. And, you know, I won't even charge you as we're learning. And so the next day I'm out literally spray calibrating a mule driven sprayer that like is ground. It does not electric. It's ground driven. And I'm like, yeah, out there with boots on calibrating this mule powered sprayer. And so that was 2015, 2018. So then we went into 3 years of formulation work for agriculture,
okay,
different formulations of microbes that needed to drive soil health for different crops. So it took us 3 years while we're still doing the turf thing. But we could see that the ag business was really going to take off. And so 2018, we had our first real commercialized ag acres. We 75,000 acres that year of corn and soy. And we thought that was something. Put in perspective, this year we'll be on 9 million applied acres. But, you know, 75,000 acres, we thought we were in business now.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was the beginning of the ag business in 2018. And it grew in the beginning very slowly because, you know, we didn't have a lot of proof of, you know, everybody wants to know who else is using it and they want to see it work. In agriculture, you have season-long feedback loops. So somebody tries it, it takes them a full year to see if it works. And then they want to see it work 2 years in a row. And then they want to see it work 3 years in a row. And then maybe you'll get their farm. So it was a really frustrating slow adoption.
Yeah.
I used to always say, so I had a board at the time. We brought in a VC partner, which I ultimately bought out because we didn't have the same vision on how to grow the business. But, you know, I'd have some tough board meetings because it was a lot longer road than I ever promised them. And I said, listen, guys, the vision is brighter than ever. Like, we're going to change how the world grows, everything. It's just a little further away than we thought. And I remember saying that. I think it was the most profound thing ever. They laughed at me. They thought it was ridiculous. But none of us, we got those guys out of the company and you know, bought it back. And we've been able to grow it on our own now. And today, you know, like I said, we'll be on 9 million acres this year. Next, and we're growing it, you know, more than 200% a year. You know, I think we'll have a $1 billion company in the next 3 to 5 years. So it's significantly bigger than I ever imagined. And it took way longer than I ever imagined. I like to say we're like a 16-year, 17-year overnight success story.
Yeah. What, I mean, I know a few stories, but like one, during those times when, you know, it's 2-3 years of hard work and, you know, adjustments and all the, obviously the science and stuff like that behind what you're producing. Like, I guess two questions. When did you have that experience where you had some guidance from your mother doing some psychedelics and so forth? And I guess in between that kind of stuff, like what's guiding you in those times? Because I mean, I'm sure that's up and down like that. I know in retrospect, when you talk about these things, right, it's, oh yeah, 3 years, but 3 years is a long time, you know, like, especially when you're in it, like every month is a long time at times, right?
Oh yeah. And 3 years of, you know, a lot of those years, negative cash flow and trying to figure out how to finance that. And you'd already put all your money back in. And I was wealthy for a period of time because I sold two companies. That all went away. You know, I will tell you, when some of it goes back to gratitude. And just like when things seem hopeless and like you don't know what to do, I had a gratitude journal I would keep, and I would just every night before I went to bed, five things I'm grateful for. Every time we start any staff meeting off, even to this day, every staff meeting, what are you grateful for, personal and business, before we start the meeting? So just keeping gratitude alive, even when it seems dark and hopeless, you can find things to be grateful for, and it helps you keep moving forward and not get lost in the negative spiral. You know, I'm probably overly optimistic and you know, believe I can do things that they're unreasonable. And so I get in too deep. And by the time I figure out I can't do it, I'm in so deep, I don't have a choice. I just got to figure out how to get it done. So I work my way out of it. I've had good people around me that have just believed in me and stayed by me. I mean, I had six people in the company that went months without paychecks. And happy to do it, but didn't even question it. You know, so we had people that believed in the mission and were willing to do whatever it took to keep moving on the mission. But ultimately, one of the biggest breakthroughs beyond gratitude, the business was starting to trend. We were making money. It wasn't growing as fast as I'd like it to, but you could see it was like there was a clear path. Was it going to be the business we have today? Yeah, maybe, but maybe 20 years instead of 4 years, you know, if you would ask me, you know, for a trajectory that made sense. I had a friend of mine that was dying of pancreatic cancer, and he asked me to go on a psychedelic, you know, journey with him. He was trying to figure out, you know, how to be at peace with what was happening to him. I frankly wasn't ready to go to this thing, but my wife said, if my friend was dying and asked me to go on a spiritual journey, I don't know how I would say no. And I'm like, okay, I guess we'll do this thing. So I went and did it, and you know, it was pretty amazing. I thought I was going for him, but, you know, I really went for what I got was one of the most powerful lessons for myself. And so I get into this journey and, you know, the whole world disappears and I get transported into another dimension. Like maybe this is just my head playing tricks on me, or maybe I actually went somewhere that is right next to us that isn't accessible to us at all times. I believe it's the latter, but either way it served me. And so I get into this other dimension and I'm like floating through space, and we had a mantra that we had that was a question we wanted answered. That was part of our mission in taking this journey. And my mantra was, allow me to be, allow me to be, allow me to be. So my idea around that was, allow me to be the best version of myself. Allow me to realize my potential. And I thought at the beginning, before I went into this journey, that I needed to bolt more things on. Like, I needed to get this skill. I needed to get that asset. I needed to be a better version of myself by learning more things, getting more things, and being more capable. And I thought if I did that, then that would also allow me to be peaceful, because then I would be the ultimate version of myself, and then I would have peace finally.
Yeah.
And so I go, allow me to be, allow me to be, allow me to be. And then for some, and by the way, when I'm in this journey and I'm basically unconscious, or I'm conscious, but at a different place, the way that I can have a conversation with you. And I've got a microphone on, and we're supposed to try to talk to ourselves to remember what we're going through. And you're talking in all these broken ideas, but you get the idea, because you were on the journey as well, and you can remember once you hear your microphone. But so I'm going, allow me to be, allow me to be, allow me to be. And I, for some reason, I start changing it. I start going, allow me to be who, allow me to be who. And then I start saying, who allows me to be, who allows me to be. And then I get really focused on who allows me to be. And then this ball of yellow, like almost sunshine, shows up and just washes over me. It was the most warm, peaceful feeling I've ever had in my entire life. And in my microphone, I go, Mom? 100% that ball of beautiful energy was my mother, who had died 7 years before this.
Okay.
And she shows up in my journey. I actually believe I accessed her, and she was with me, and we were at this other dimension that I think is right next to us, but we just can't access it.
Yeah. I subscribe to that too.
Or maybe I'm just imagining this and it's in my head. Again, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
It served me both ways.
Yeah.
But I think I was talking to my mom, and she says, and you know, she's communicating to me in, not in words, but like almost through, you know,
telepathy,
my mind.
Yeah. But it's like a feeling, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
She basically says, I'm going to show you something that I think you need to learn as a leader. And so she shows me she starts giving me these visions of all these laser beams, like all these beams of light that are moving forward. They're all moving generally forward. Some are going up in a curve. Some are going down a curve. Some are going left. Some are going right. But they're all moving generally forward. Every color you can imagine. It seems like there's an unlimited number of them. And she says, each one of these beams of light are available to you. Each one of these beams of light are an energy flow. And they're all accessible to you. And she says, you just need to figure out which one you want to access and then get into that energy flow. And she says, what you need to do is to create a compelling vision, an altruistic compelling vision that's outside of yourself. So it's not like, oh, I want to get a Learjet, you know, in 5 years. It's how can I help the world, you know, grow, you know, how can I help the farmers feed the planet and clean the planet? How can I, you know, help be a catalyst to help, you know, make the world a better place? And so create a compelling vision that's outside of yourself, altruistic, and get really focused on that compelling vision. By getting really focused on that compelling vision, that's like tuning the frequency of a radio knob, and you tune into the right energy flow by getting really focused on that. And then that gets you into flow. She goes on, she says, the destination matters. And in my journey, she says, in the beginning, but once you get into that flow, let go of the destination. It's at that point, it's only a reference point. If you hang on to the destination too tight, then you're going to try to force things. You're going to be focused on time, and time is irrelevant.
Yeah.
She says, once you let go and you just joyfully play and work in the flow while focusing on that compelling vision and telling as many people as you can about the compelling vision, you'll get there faster than you ever thought, and time doesn't matter, so don't even think about that. So she says, create that compelling vision and talk to everybody you can about it. And what will happen is not only will you tune into that flow, but you'll get others that'll get excited to tune into the flow with you. And then she shows me, we go from laser beams to like a stream, like running water, a small stream. And then she shows me a rock dropping into the stream, and it's splash. And you see like the eddies that get formed because the rock got dropped the stream, and a little frothy water creates friction. Then she drops another rock, splash, another rock, splash. And she goes, focus on what you're for. And then she goes very aggressively, not what you're against. And she said that to me like 50 times. Focus on what you're for, lovingly, not what you're against, really aggressively. Yeah. And then she says, those rocks, every time you focus on what you're against, you're dropping a rock into your flow. And she goes, why would you ever drop a rock into your flow? That's just silly.
Yeah.
She goes, I say, if you can drop enough rocks into that flow, and she shows me those three rocks and then four and then five and then six, and then all of a sudden the stream stops. And it's just these little trickles coming between the rocks. She says, you'll stop the flow. And then she says, there'll be no flow, no mo, just like that. And she says, why would you do that? But she says, so focus on what you're for, not what you're against. If you get too hung up on the destination, then you're going to focus on all the things that you're against that are slowing you down from getting there. Let go of the destination. Know you're moving towards that destination. It's still a reference point. You still talk about it, but don't get hung up on when it's going to happen. It'll happen faster than you think, but time is irrelevant. And then she says, by attracting others into your flow that want to be in flow, then your stream, they'll join it, and their stream will join your stream, and it'll be a bigger stream. And then eventually it'll become a river. And if you get enough people to join your flow, it'll turn into an ocean current. And ocean currents are unstoppable. And so as a leader, your job is to create that compelling vision, attract others to your vision, make sure you don't drop rocks, focus on what you're for, not what you're against, and make sure everybody else knows don't drop rocks. And you'll be amazed at what happens. And so she then changes the vision to a dolphin. And she shows me these dolphins playing in the ocean current. And you can see the current moving, and the dolphins are moving with the current. And she says, look at the dolphins. They're just joyfully playing and working. She says, the current is taking them to their destination. They're not swimming against the flow. They're swimming with the flow. The current is bringing them food, and the dolphins are eating their food, and it's coming right to them. She says, all they do is joyfully play and work while they're moving towards their destination, and that's what you need to do. And then she shows me my family in our boat, and this happens all the time. We're house in the Keys, so we are out there seeing dolphins all the time. And every time, and maybe Mark, you or your listeners have had this experience, every time you see a dolphin in the wild, everybody stops and looks at that dolphin. I mean, people see it on the beach. You'll see everybody on the beach start pointing and taking pictures.
Yeah.
You can't not look at a dolphin, even if you saw one 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And my mom says, you know why that is? And she says, because dolphins are more evolved than humans are at being in flow. That's their natural state. And all humans are attracted to other beings in flow. And so she says, your job is to go out there and be a dolphin and attract others to your flow, because they're going to want to be attracted to be in flow with you. If you can just joyfully play and work, communicate that compelling vision, focus on what you're for, not what you're against, your job's to go be a dolphin. And so I came out of that.
But I'd say that's profound. That was a profound experience.
I came out of that journey, and you know, the next morning the sun is brighter than ever, the sky is bluer than ever, and I walk out of my room, and the first thing I see is a bunch of ants marching in a line, and they've got the food. Like, you can see some of the ants are carrying food, and they're going to their ant nest. And I would have normally maybe stepped on those ants, or certainly I would have either ignored them or tried to destroy them.
Yeah.
And this time I just sat there in awe of these ants, and I'm watching them, and I'm like, these ants are in total flow. They're just being dolphins. And I look at the birds, and the birds are working together with worms and going to the nest, and like, the birds are in flow. Like, Mother Nature is always in flow, except for when we screw it up. And our job is to just get into flow. And so then I start talking about this to my company and to my partners, and they get really excited about this. We've got a core value now of flow. We all in the whole company, we talk about dropping rocks, or, you know, focus on what you're for, not what you're against. We get really clear with our compelling vision. Within months of this journey, magical things start happening. I start attracting people to the company that I never would have, I couldn't have hired. They start, how can I help? I want to help. I want to be part of this journey. I want to be part of this compelling vision. And so, I mean, a bunch of people showed up that are names you wouldn't know, but they're really powerful people. But a couple, just to give you some perspective on people you would know, I get a call from Richard Branson from Virgin, the billionaire, space cowboy, you name it. And he calls me up. He's with another person that's involved in our company through an investment, and they're in a hot tub together. And he says, hey, listen, I want you to explain to Richard about what you're doing with carbon. And we start talking about how we're starting to figure out how to sequester carbon in soil. And Richard's was on the think tank that actually created the whole idea around carbon credits. And one of his missions is to make sure the world is not going to fall apart because of environmental disaster for his kids and his grandkids before he dies. He wants to have that mission at least moving forward. Mm-hmm. And so this was a compelling vision that he was already on. And when he found out I was on this, he wanted to learn. And so I start talking to these guys in a hot tub and about what we're doing. And I'm in an Uber, and I can't believe I'm on the phone with Richard Branson in a hot tub. And like, they called me. I didn't call him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he says, well, listen, I'd like to see if I can help you. We had a few more phone calls, but ultimately he's like, could you come to Necker Island, in the British Virgin Islands, and you know, I'd love to spend maybe half a day with you guys and see if I could be of service. So I'm like, yeah, we can get there. And so literally, we first date he gives us, we show up. And man, I was so excited. Richard Branson was really one of my heroes. I mean, I have a vision board that I actually set up when I started this company. And on this vision board, there were people that I wanted to emulate or attract towards me. And one was Richard Branson. One was Warren Buffett. There was also on there Tony Robbins and an athlete because I wanted to be in good shape and some other things. Wayne Dwyer was on there too. So it wasn't just Richard, but he was one of the faces I cut. I literally cut these pictures out of the magazine, stuck them on this vision board and hung up on my office. Now Richard Branson's calling me, right? And so we go to his island and me and my partner are there and I'm super excited. I got the notebook out. I'm ready to go. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. We don't know when he's going to meet us, but it was going to be the morning. But, you know, so we show up as early as we can and we're waiting and 9 comes and 10 comes and 10:30 comes. And I'm like, oh gosh, I hope Richard's going to show up. Like maybe he forgot we're here. And then, you know, about 10:45, Richard comes, you know, stumbling in and literally has one button on his button up, like a short sleeve shirt with one button on it. Open chest almost, board shorts that are wet, no shoes, his hair's all wet and wispy, and he's got a big smile on his face and big wide eyes, and he says, I'm so sorry you boys had to wait for me, but you know, when the wind is perfect and the water's perfect, I have to start my day off with a good kiteboarding session, and today was just that kind of day, and I promise you I'm going to be a better service to you because I got to go do my kiteboarding this morning before we get to go to work. So, you know, forgive me, but this is going to be good. And I promise to do my part. And I look at my partner and I said, this guy's a motherfucking dolphin.
Yeah.
His job is to, he skimmed across the surface of the water by holding onto a kite before he came to work with us. If he's not joyfully playing and working in the flow, I don't know who is.
Yeah.
And so I thought, man, this is exactly what my mom meant. This guy has created 200 companies. He's the first businessman to put himself into space. He does nothing but joyfully play and work in the flow. And so it was a great full circle of my mom's lesson coming alive. Now today, Richard Branson's on our cap table. As is Howard Buffett Jr. So that would be Warren Buffett's grandson.
You can't make that stuff up.
Yeah. And so these guys are not only on our cap table, but they're active in the company helping us attract sustainability buyers to our carbon credit program. And so we recently had an event on Necker Island where we invited a bunch of chief sustainability officers from, you know, a bunch of Fortune 50 companies. And we're there to kind of have a summit about how we can use soil to sequester carbon and fix the CO2 problem in the atmosphere. And we basically trying to help them see that we could be a our solution. And they need to, you know, see our and help us, kind of basically I'm trying to give them the compelling vision to join our flow. Right.
Yeah.
And we're doing it on Richard's Island because he helped us host it. And so it was a beautiful event and we had a great collaboration with a bunch of really smart people doing really great stuff and no way we could have gotten it. And they're all joining our flow now in ways that you can't even imagine. But one of the things that happened at this moment, that was the total full circle that goes back to the burning building when my dad took that picture, is Richard says, hey, I want everybody to go out on the spit of land. It's literally a sandbar and it's nighttime and he has a little bonfire and some music and some, you know, coolers full of beers out there. And I'm not quite sure why we're all out there because it was a bit of a hassle and there's a beautiful island right there. Like, why are we standing in this sandbar that's ankle deep in water? And like, he's like, I got a surprise, just hang on. And so then here comes Richard Branson on his kiteboard, hanging from a kite, surfing across the surface of the ocean, glow sticks tied to his arms and his legs so that you could see him because it's nighttime. He's got a cape, like a Superman cape, and he's scooching across the top of the water and he comes right past our spit of land. And everybody's like cheering. It's like unbelievable. Yeah. You can't believe it. And then here off in the distance, you see this giant cruise ship, Virgin cruise ships coming right towards this island, this relatively small channel that doesn't normally have cruise ships. And as the cruise ship's coming by, you can see the LED on the side of the entire cruise ship was lit up with a word that said Earth. And our event was called Earthrise. So Holganic was hosting Earthrise. So it says Earth on the side of this big cruise ship. And the cruise ship's going honk, honk, right? Like the big, loud cruise ship horn. Richard's going back and forth on his kiteboard like a dolphin between us and the spit and the cruise ship. And then there's fireworks going on behind the cruise ship. And there's a bonfire. And I said, I'm just looking at this, and literally my head, I'm holding on to my head. I can't even believe it's happening. And I look at one of the chairman of our board, and I said, this is the greatest single business moment of my entire life. And he gets a picture of me. I didn't know this, or actually got the video of me saying that with the fire in the background, the bonfire.
Yeah.
With the fireworks with Richard and the earth. And then the next day at Earthrise, he goes and opens up with a picture of the barn burning down with all my fertilizer, and then full circle moment to this fire, and from one fire to the next, kind of our journey of Holganics, which was our 17 year overnight success, but the two bookends of that. But that's, it would never would have happened had I not been grateful during the fire and had an attitude of gratitude. It never would have happened had I not gone on that journey and experienced the flow with my mom.
Yeah,
I was pushing a rock up a hill before that journey. We were growing the business, but we were growing with absolute sheer will and determination. I would say most days were frustrating and not joyful.
Yeah.
But, we were working towards something, noble, and we'll work as hard as we have to, and it's no problem. Like pain is a badge of honor. The harder it is, the better I am because I'm working hard. And then when she showed me to be in flow, instead of pushing a rock up a hill, just ride the slope down the hill and just joyfully play and work and attract others to you. It seems magical. It seems ridiculous. The business
makes
started
sense. Growing.
Yeah. And everything started becoming fun, and people started showing up to help us do things we never could have done on our own at a speed that made no sense.
Yeah.
The business today is bigger than I ever imagined. Remember I said I thought it'd be a $100 million business someday. Today is bigger than I ever imagined by a lot, with a trajectory that's taking us to something I never would have even pictured. And we're doing things I never could have done. It's other people that are doing it. All I did was create the compelling vision, and I support them doing it. And magic is happening. And every day is joyful. Every day is fun. And don't get me wrong, we're still working 80 hours a week, but it's a fun 80 hours instead of a laborious 80 hours.
That's the difference, right?
Yeah. And instead of growing at 20% through sheer will and determination, we're growing at 250%, and everything is happening effortlessly.
Yeah. Oh, it's so inspiring. I mean, and shout out to your mother. I mean, she's like an executive coach up there wherever she's hanging out, right?
Now, let me give you one more thing that's just going to sound like I'm just making stuff up. A week ago, we had my youngest son's wedding. His name is Reef. His wife's name is Meadow. The baby's name is Blossom. They had a baby before they got married. He's following my program.
So they had
a baby at 20. And so they're getting married, and we did it at the BVIs at Mosquito Island, which is right next to Richard's Island at Necker Island. And we're having the rehearsal dinner, and I'm doing my speech for the rehearsal dinner the night before the wedding. And we're literally tables out on the beach, and there's a harbor right out in front of us. And like 15 minutes before I go on to do my talk, everybody starts pointing. What's out in the harbor right in front of us? A dolphin.
Of course.
A dolphin is doing its little dolphin thing, where they're just kind of surfacing and like playing. And everybody's pointing and looking at it. And they tell me that the people there from that area said they've never seen a dolphin in that harbor. That dolphins don't usually show up in the BVIs. And I'm like, that's my mom.
No,
100%. Mom is showing up. And so my speech to my son about, marriage and all that turned into, marriage is to really have a great marriage, is to focus on being in flow, focus on what you're for, not what you're against. Don't let those tough times get to you. Create that compelling vision that's going to get you through those tough times. And it was a spontaneous speech, but it became from my mom. And it was the exact same message that she gave me for business. And transferred right into a speech for him, and that was a week ago.
Wow, it's so inspiring, and it for so many reasons. Because I think there's so many people, and I mean, I put myself in that camp as well. That you work really hard, and I think you might have like moments of what you're describing, but then the majority is the outworking and the pushing and so forth, and. It's just inspiring to witness, like, it doesn't have to be like that, right? There's another way, and these practices and gratitude and so, like, that's accessible to everyone, right? And it doesn't have to be super complicated, but I imagine, like, and it seems like, in those longer years and so forth, as this is all developing, like, the consistency of of the gratitude and like listening and following the intuition and coming back to that kind of the North Star, right, of being the dolphin, really, and finding more of the crew and the tribe and attracting. You know, if you just keep showing up like that, magical things keep happening. And it, who doesn't want to live like that, right?
Yeah. And it, right? And you said it, Mark, but just to echo it, it's 100% available to everybody.
Yeah.
It's just our job to just tune into it and let it happen. And it's hard. I'm not saying it's simple. You know, there's still days that I get challenged. There's still days I might punch my steering wheel and cuss and moan about something. But as soon as I do, I take a deep breath and I say, no. This is something to be grateful for here. Don't, you know, it's not like I never get mad.
Yeah.
But when I do, I have these things to anchor back to. I also talk about it so much inside my company that my team all talks about it. And so while none of us can be like this 100% of the time, somebody in the company can be like this 100% of the time, and we can pull each other up when we fall down. It's been the other magical thing that's happened is my team's totally bought into it. And I'll tell you, the Brother David story of gratitude and my mom's story, they totally dovetailed into each other. I don't think I would have been ready for my mother's story if I had not spent that time around gratitude. I don't think I would have been ready for my mother's story had I not also experienced pushing a rock up a hill, because you don't know the difference.
Yeah.
And one of the things that Brother David told me, and I became a mentor of Brother David's. I literally was on phone calls with him once a month for a year and a half or so. And one of the things he told me was, do you know the difference between a trip and a pilgrimage? Hmm. And he says, in a trip, you've got the point of where you are, and then you've got your destination. And everything in between is a hassle that's necessary for you to endure to get to your destination. He says, a pilgrimage, the destination is the reference point, but the goal is every step in that pilgrimage. And you'll be grateful for every step of the pilgrimage. And where you're walking to is almost irrelevant. So when you think about Brother David's, you know, contrast of trip versus pilgrimage, and you think about my mom being in flow, they're the same story.
Exact same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. I mean, I know we're at time. I mean, I can speak to you for hours. This is just inspiring, continues to come to mind as the word, or as you continue to describe, you know, your journey. And like, I also feel excited because it seems like you're just at the beginning, you know, in a way, right? Like, and I can feel that from you. It's like, it's like the excitement of the venture, like what possibly is going to be next, and all for, and it's all linked to, I mean, the ripple effect, you know, that we all benefit from, what you're putting into the world and into the ground, really, I should say, really. It's incredible. I mean, thank you.
Thank you for saying that. But, you know, at the end of the day, entrepreneurs, our mission, if we really want to be entrepreneurs, not shopkeepers, not men and women of commerce, but entrepreneurs, what entrepreneurs get to do is we get to make the world a better place by solving problems that nobody's ever solved before. Somehow making our products or services better, cheaper, safer, more convenient, somehow adding value to the world by solving problems nobody's ever solved before. And if we get to do that, we get revenue and gross margin and profits byproduct, but it's not the goal. The goal is to go solve problems in a way that nobody's ever done before and make the world a better place. As entrepreneurs, I think it's one of the most noblest professions that anybody can be in. And we get to be in that profession. We just got to remember that that's what we're doing. It's not about stacking up $100 bills. It's about solving problems and making the world a better place. And then the $100 bills will follow you.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. Well, this has been a real honor, Barrett, a real delight to spend time with you. I mean, I was inspired when I first met you and got to hang with you and your amazing group at GOT and MIT and all that. And here we are, continues. And the door, of course, is always open over here if we can help support the mission outside of course, this conversation in any other way. I mean, it's exciting. Like, I feel the dolphin energy there. And that is, I almost don't have words for that. So thank you for making time to come on the show. But, of course, a higher thank you for listening to your mom. Let's just say that. Listening to mom. And continuing to do so, and everyone on the journey and the ride with you. So thank you.